Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 115. I'm Mo. Hello, everybody. And hello to you, Eleanor Goodman. How are you doing?
Hello, Merlin Alderslade. I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I am good. Why are we talking like robots?
I feel like you started it and I can't change it.
Well, fine. loads of stuff to talk about on the podcast this week. The latest issue of Metal Hammer is, of course, out right now, featuring a world-exclusive interview with Randy Blythe of Lamb of God fame is what I meant to say. Their new album is out next month, and just before all the world went into lockdown madness, we nipped over to Richmond, Virginia for a very candid and serious and interesting interview with Randy himself. Strongly suggest you go out and get that when you're able to, however you're able to, most safely, of course. We have also now released our Lamb of God bundles, which feature that very said magazine, involving a exclusive cover that you can't get anywhere else, and a world exclusive specially commissioned art print by Mr. Luke Preece. He is the man behind quite iconic now art prints that, such as Metallica. I've actually got one of his Metallica prints up in my house right now. He's done stuff for Ozzy, he's done a few things for Ghost, and we got him to do a specially commissioned thing for Lamb of God. It is gorgeous. It will look fantastic on your house. So go to tinyurl.com/buyhammer, where you can order that bundle or just the regular edition issue directly to your house. I say bum news, but I think it was inevitable. We kind of knew this would happen. Reading and Leeds cancelled this week. We also saw Rammstein, Guns N' Roses and Maiden all cancel their tours. In Maiden's case, at least, they postponed it. Most of the dates have been rescheduled in Europe to 2021. Just kind of going back to what we've been saying, really, that 2021 is going to be pure fire emoji L.
Yeah, I'm a bit sad because I was going to go to Coventry and see Rammstein as a birthday present to myself. So I'm going to have to stage my own Rammstein gig in my house.
Do it. I did that with my mates last weekend, actually. It was great. Not set fire to my house, but stage our own festival thing. Basically making a YouTube playlist and just everyone watching it on Zoom together. It's quite good fun. Doesn't quite replace actually being at a festival or at a gig, but you know, we do what we can. I saw there's more news this... Sorry, go on.
No, I was agreeing with you. Hard agree.
But yeah, it's a good laugh. I strongly suggest people do that as well if they're looking for something to do a bit different that isn't just another fucking quiz. Not to say I'm getting sick of quizzes, but you know, I am. speaking of live music, actually, I don't know if you saw this other this thing that the Live Nation CEO Michael Rapino talked about recently. He kind of put out a new interview that you can read a little snippet of on Metal Hammer, but it came from another site which I've forgotten. But go there afterwards to read the whole thing, basically. But he said that over the next summer, there will be testing happening on how they're going to introduce gigs again, how we're going to get back to a live music world. He's talking about things like fanless concerts with like good broadcasting opportunities. He's talking about drive-in concerts, reduced capacity concerts. People are really looking into this kind of stuff now, and they're kind of looking with a view to 2021 to getting back to normal. But in the meantime, looking at ways to just try and find ways for us to do something that feels like some semblance of a gig, which I think, I'd take that, wouldn't you? I don't know.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed the events that I've watched. I've watched Devon, I've watched Casatonia, watched Cavell Attack, a few other bits and pieces, and they've all been really interesting in their own ways. And at the end of the day, you get to see the artists performing their songs, and that's pretty cool. I wonder about what they'll do for socially distanced gigs, because I've seen a couple of floor plans of venues in the States where they've sort of blocked off sections, you know, like five people a section or whatever, and you have to buy all the tickets at once and go with your family unit. And I kind of wonder how that will work if they start doing it on a regular basis, because I'm assuming ticket prices have to be pretty high if you're sectioning off so many seats and, you know, you're essentially just not selling like a bunch of seats.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? How do you Franz? It's Franz, isn't it, from Attila? I saw him tweeting about this kind of stuff and said he's been chatting to people, and you know, he seemed to speculate that it's going to mean more expensive gig tickets and stuff, because if you're doing reduced capacity gigs, you still have to kind of pay the overheads of each building, but with putting far less people inside. It was Variety, by the way, that Michael Rapino was talking to, that we reported on. So you can go check out that whole thing on Variety. But yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because I've seen a lot of reaction to this, and some people are saying, oh, we'd rather wait until we could just have full concerts again. Some people are up for it. I just think we just got to remember that no one knows what the fuck we're doing at the moment. No one knows what's going to happen, even now.
I like something more than nothing. Like, it's been, like I said, I really enjoyed the things that I've watched online. It's been really nice to sort of connect with some of that music, and, you know, they're still in some of those live streams and things that are of fan communities as well, of lots of people watching and commenting and stuff. So there's still sort of, you know, an audience reaction, as it were. It's just a different kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, exactly. I think, you know, the world will get back to some semblance of normality at some point, but, you know, we need the live music sector to have not just a long-term future, but an immediate future. And I guess you won't have the second without, you won't have one without the other, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I'm not madly in love with the idea necessarily of sitting in a car for a festival, but if that's the only, I mean, we talked about this recently, like, we don't drive, so I literally can't do that unless I'm bunged in the back of someone else's car. But I think I would.
I've got a license, but I haven't got a car, so it's not going to happen. Yeah.
I got a driving license and drive around for about a week and then move to London and never drive again.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did.
300 quid well spent. Cheers. but yeah, the point being that we'll just have to see what happens. And I think, you know, reduced capacity gigs, that's an interesting one. Are we really going to be able to have a gig where you have to be 2 meters away from people at all times? Is that really possible?
Well, I think it's possible in a seated venue, but we've got a long way to go because, you know, we still haven't solved the transport issue. Things that, in the UK at least, you know, there's talk of lockdown easing from today, but in reality, you know, what that means is something a lot more complex. And think of having gigs in London. Say you did do a gig at like the O2 Arena or something, the amount of traffic that brings in, even with reduced capacity, people would have to come in on the underground, and
yeah.
It's just, so there are so many logistical issues. And then do the venue serve food and drink? And I mean, I guess they would. And it's just, yeah, I don't know, there's so many things you'd have to work out, and they're still trying to work them out in normal life. You know, think about going back to school and stuff. It's like all that will probably happen before gigs happen.
Yeah, no, I just spot on, really. I can't really add much more to that other than I think I agree with what you said. I'll take something over nothing. I mean, there's loads of things just kind of starting to look at opening back up. I saw that VU Cinema are looking at doing like reduced capacity screenings and stuff like that. It's just fascinating to see how it's all going to work out. But in the meantime, YouTube festivals, they're the future, mate. I'm telling you.
And maybe they'll do more, you know, like we've seen people streaming and setting up gigs and stuff. Maybe they'll do more stuff like in cinemas, you know, when sometimes there are live events like ballet or theatre and occasionally concerts, and they actually just have a screening in a cinema. Maybe they'll end up doing stuff like that as well.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I think alcohol will play quite a big role in how successful this stuff is as well, because it's one thing telling everyone to be socially distant, but if everyone's boozed up, you're gonna find it really hard, like even in a seated capacity or whatever, for people to just like not touch each other or like near each other. So yeah, it's an interesting one, but it's a really, really interesting read with Michael Rapino from Live Nation. So yeah, go over to Variety to read that in full. You know, he's probably got a pretty good idea of where the lay of the land might be. In unarguably positive and brilliant news, Dave Mustaine has posted some photos of himself tracking vocals for the new Megadeth album.
Yay!
Come on. That's what I'm talking about. So good to see Dave Mustaine doing what he was put on this earth to do after everything that happened with him last year. Obviously, we had the cover feature with him last month talking about his cancer battle. And yeah, I think the fact that we're still able to see all this new music coming out is really exciting. And I can't wait to hear a new Megadeth album. I thought Dystopia was pretty good. And yeah, more of that, please, Dave. basically. I just suddenly remembered as well, I didn't put it on the running order, but Tony Hawk game redubbed. I'm excited about that, L. Coming from the new metal era, from the greatest era of metal music, making a comeback. Tony Hawk, a remastered crazy version of his Pro Skater games. That should be absolutely awesome. Yeah, there's good shit going on, is my point. There's stuff to be excited about.
Oh, yeah, and there's so much people are doing behind the scenes, you know, and planning for stuff and, yeah, loads of things. It's not like the world has stopped. We might be inside, but things are still moving forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. With Intentation, have a new song out as well, speaking of new things.
They do!
It's cool. The what?
I was exclaiming. They do have a new song.
Oh, I thought you said me too. I was like, do you? Put that under wraps. Entertain You has now been out. It's not Robbie Williams' cover, obviously. That would be ridiculous. Interesting track. Have you listened to it?
It's really rocky. It's like, I saw they had the voice of their producer, Daniel Gibson, on there, because as soon as someone starts singing, you're like, that's not Sharon, that's a man.
I think you'll find that was an exclusive reveal courtesy of my interview with Sharon that you can read on the Metal Hammer website right now.
I read that on the Metal Hammer website, not realising that it came from you.
Came from me, indeed. Talked to our mate Shaz last week for something else that's going to be in a future issue of Metal Hammer, but I asked her about the new single as well. Interesting what they're doing, because they're basically... And I actually put this to her. They're basically taking the approach of a dance band or a hip hop group, like a lot of genres outside of metal do right now. In that they're going to be releasing songs and not necessarily doing so in a kind of, you know, promo song album format. They're just going to be releasing songs for the foreseeable future, and then there might be an album down the road, but it'll be mostly made up of songs we've already heard.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, very different. I think their attitude is, and this isn't something to do with lockdown, by the way. This is something they were considering anyway. So they're kind of changing up their approach to releasing music because, she said they're doing it because they think it's good for fans to just have something new to look forward to all the time.
I think it's really interesting, and I think you hear it in the sound as well. The last record was really dynamic, and this song is more like sort of where bands like Papa Roach have gone. It's sort of more...
Yeah.
It's more rock territory than it is like super heartland metal territory. And it sounds like it's more mainstream, but with like dark content than it.
Yeah, dark than it content.
Is. Yeah. I like dark content. Yeah. It definitely sounds like something that you'd hear on the radio. It sounds like they're sort of consciously or not consciously going for a wider audience and sort of spreading their wings out a bit more.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, with Intentation and one of those bands where I think I've talked about it before, but their album, The Unforgiving, for me, was a really good example of that band's ability to just craft brilliant poppy rock songs. Very little in the way of kind of proper kind of symphonic metal on that record. It was just a great rock album. And I definitely think they've got the capacity to do that and, you know, maybe break into America in a way they haven't on a huge level to this point yet. So it'll be interesting to see if this works for them. It's a fun song, so if you haven't heard it, go check it out. In more brilliant people doing brilliant things news, I was with my voice today because I recorded radio earlier, so I'm already all like talked out. I'm all like this. Goodness me. Cycling charity organization and our dear friends the Heavy Metal Truants have announced that their annual Ride to Download will now be a virtual event. So if you haven't heard of the Truants before, longtime friends of Metal Hammer, former Metal Hammer editor-in-chief Alexander Milas is a big part of that company. They usually cycle from London up to Download Festival every year over a weekend to raise money for charity. They've raised literally hundreds of thousands of pounds over the years. Such a great bunch of guys and girls doing awesome stuff. Obviously, they're not going to be able to do that this year because there is no Download and they probably won't be able to cycle in a group of 50 fucking people anyway. So they're doing the virtual event. So if you are at home and you've got a bike or you've got a, what do you call the bikes that aren't bikes?
Stationary bike? Exercise bike?
Yeah, an exercise Peloton. Bike.
That's a brand.
You can actually get involved with this. So you don't have to actually get out and about. If you've got an exercise bike sitting in your house or if you do have a bike and you're kind of out cycling as part of your daily exercise, you can get involved with this. So go over to metalhammer.com to find out how you can get involved. It's a 170-mile journey that you have to complete. but I believe that you can do it over the next however many weeks it is until download would have happened. So it's not like normal where you have to bang them all out in one weekend. Join up, track up your like Strava or whatever app you use to log them in. And then you can get involved and raise some money for charity. So I would really love to do this, but I can't cycle properly because I'm crap and I don't have an exercise bike. So maybe I'll just try and run it. I'm not going to do that. That's a lie. But yeah, great things from the Heavy Metal Truants. Go to hammer.com, metalhammer.com, that is, to find out more about that. El mentioned earlier about within Temptation kind of going down a more polished super radio US rock route. And I feel that's very pertinent for the album of the week this week, because we're going to do the new Asking Alexandria album. Now, this is a band who have been through a really interesting evolution since they first turned up on the scene. Used to be very intrinsically linked to Metal Hammer. We used to talk about them a lot on the podcast. I don't feel like we've talked about them quite so much on the podcast in recent years, which maybe says something of where they've gone musically recently. I actually reviewed the last album for Metal Hammer, and I kind of talked about how whatever you were hoping that the return of Danny would bring, what it's actually brought is a very clear and considered maneuver into being a big polished radio rock band that is kind of tailor-made for American radio, which is not an insult. It's just that's clearly where they're going. And I think they do that very well. And I think they've kind of pushed that even further on Like a House on Fire. What did you make of this record, though?
I can't believe they've been going since 2008. Because in my mind, no, it's like, oh yeah, they're still one of the newer metal bands. But now it's 2020 and they're not really a metal band anymore. They are a rock band. And like you said, they've gone down this really slick road of making stuff that's basically designed for US rock radio and US arenas. And I was reading the materials that came out with the record, and it said that last year they did an arena tour supporting Shinedown, and they also supported Papa Roach. That you can definitely tell that they toured with both of those bands. And Ben Bruce, guitarist and obviously sort of co-band leader with Danny, said that what people go to a rock show for was fresh in our minds. They're there to forget about their worries and have a good time. And I think you can definitely tell on that record they've taken what they've experienced at those shows and then taken that to the studio.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, you know, it makes sense to me because I kind of feel like where Asking Alexandria came from, that kind of glitchy electronica induced brand of metalcore is very dated now, to be honest. Like the scene they came from, I don't feel like many of those bands have aged particularly well. You don't really see people excited about those bands anymore.
And so, the fans will have grown up too as well. You know, if you're listening to that in 2008 and it's 12 years on, you're not going to be in the same place in your life as you were back then.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because you kind of think about, you know, how do you reach new fans? How do you reach different fans? And when I was listening to this record, I was kind of thinking, you know, it's not really for me. It's kind of that super polished, shiny, nice brand of rock music that isn't really my vibe. Then I thought, well, actually, there's a lot of people that really do like this stuff. And I think if you're a fan of bands like Shinedown and all those kind of guys, and you heard this come on the radio and you didn't really know who it was, you'd probably be quite into this. And I think they do it really, really well. You know, the production on this album sounds absolutely massive. Again, that's something they've always got really spot on in their career, whatever direction they've gone with. I was quite surprised to hear the amount of kind of like vocoded, almost robotic vocals that they've done, where you really overproduce them to the point where it sounds like it's like literally being fed through a computer or something. That's obviously a very, you know, of today thing to do.
Of the day thing to do. Are you like 80?
Of today, I said, not of the day, of right now. It's a modern thing to do. It's zeitgeisty. And you know, I think it kind of works. It's weird to kind of put a vocalist as talented as Danny through that kind of mix because his voice is so powerful, and I feel like you're almost taking a bit of the guts out of it when you do that. But you know, it's something they do quite a lot on here, so they're obviously feeling it. I thought the song Anti-Socialist in particular, when I first heard that, I just thought, well, someone's been listening to Ammo Era, Bring Me the Horizon, because that is literally what this song sounds like. There's kind of bloopy, bleepy bits. There's kind of like almost R&B beats mixed over a rock track. Yeah, I just thought that was super Bring Me the Horizon-y. Obviously, there's ballads on here. I Don't Need You is a big ballad. Light Is in the Air moment. It's hard not to see Danny driving a lot of this, just because when you look at the videos and the way he is now and the way he uses his voice these days, it kind of feels like an album that is very suited to his persona as a kind of rock and roll frontman, which is what he's kind of been about for a long time now.
Yeah, a lot of the lyrics are sort of delivered in a rock and roll kind of way, and there's a lot of generic rock and roll stuff on there. In Down to Hell, he's like, I'm coming up, I'm going down to hell, you know. It's like very sort of generic rock and roll 101 stuff, but in his voice it does work, because like you said, that is his persona nowadays. And I think the couple of songs you mentioned as well, Antisocialist, I definitely got that Bring Me vibe from it, and also a bit of Justin Timberlake. And
yeah, totally.
On I Don't Need You, the other song you mentioned, they've got a female vocalist called Grace Grundy. And that one, when I listened to it, reminded me, it doesn't really sound exactly the same, but it reminded me of what Papa Roach did on their song Periscope with Skylar Grey, when they got somebody in to sing on that.
I didn't know they had Skylar Grey on a track. That's cool.
Yeah, so I did wonder if it was, again, because they toured with Papa Roach and they talked about those influences, I wonder if that was kind of a little, you know, seeing what they did and doing their own take on it type thing.
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, it feels like a very modern album. It feels like an album made right now. As I said, you know, you can't keep kind of just doing the same stuff. They've had to move forward with this. And I think it works. It'll be really interesting to see if it takes them to a different crowd or not. I mean, that's not to say that there isn't any interesting stuff on there. It's fairly one paced, but there are some little interesting bits and bobs. The track One Turns to None, I thought was quite interesting. That's got this kind of like glammy industrial stomp under it, but then it's got this kind of Panic at the Disco meets Oingo Boingo kind of twinkly piano vibe going on as well, that gives it a bit of an off-kilter vibe. That's quite cool.
Also reminded me of Nickelback, because it says, I'm an animal. There's quite a few bits in that rock and roll kind of spectrum that reminded me of Chad.
Isn't it? I mean, did you ever think that we'd be reviewing an Asking Alexandria album and comparing them to Nickelback?
Nickelback, surprisingly, I don't know, seems to come up quite often. They're good at what they do.
Yeah, no, totally. Another band that are really good at what they do. You can hate on Nickelback, man, but like, they know how to write big, daft, dumb rock songs, and that's kind of what this album is. I don't think it would be fair to say that they completely abandoned like their own identity and sound, because the way it's produced and some of the cool little atmospherics and little moments of heaviness that come out really make this album stand apart from a lot of those other bands. Like The Violins, for instance, that's a cool stompy number. That's got some kind of screams in and feels a little bit more gritty and a little bit more connected to where they've come from. So it very much still feels like an Asking Alexandria album. It's just an Asking Alexandria album for what that band is in 2020. And if you want a big, harmless, fun slice of well-produced, slightly on the heavier side of modern rock and roll, then I think you could definitely do worse than checking this album out. If you weren't a fan of theirs from the start, you could probably still give this a go, because it's so different from what they were doing back in the day that it might win you over. If you weren't into what they were doing on the last album, I'd say you definitely wouldn't like this so much, because the kind of more different elements of the last record are kind of what is the center of this whole album for me. For better or worse. But it'll be interesting to see if it, as an album, can make them take over the old airwaves.
The old airwaves.
I'm really hard for that to not come out sounding wank.
the screaming thing's interesting for me, because I notice when you're talking about Bring Me, and he kind of does that thing, like the song Down to Hell, he does like a proper scream, but it's always capped. And it's a bit like what Bring Me did and things like that. The Spirit, it's like there'll be a scream, but it'll always be stopped before it can kind of go too far. It'll always be kind of compressed as well, so it sounds more like a part of the song than something that stands alone. So they've definitely still got those like old Asking bits in them, but they're very much modified for what they do now.
Yeah, agreed. So yeah, you might like this album. If you're in the mood for some just like well-polished rock and roll, could do worse than listening to the new Asking Alexandria album, Like a House on Fire. It's out on Friday. There's quite a few good releases out this week, actually. There's a new Bush album, which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, that's cool.
But there we go. There's a new Bush record, and the new Paradise Lost album, Obsidian, is absolutely wonderful as well. I played a track from that on the Metal Hammer show on Feedback Radio this week. That's out on Friday with Nuclear Blast, and the Majestic Triptychon have a live album out as well, taken from their set at Roadburn. So yeah, loads of good stuff to tick whatever box you want ticking, basically. I don't know why I'm sounding like fucking smashy and nicey this week. Ask your dad if you don't know who that is. For questions from facebook.com/Metal Hammer Readers. Shariel, do you want to do the first one?
Sure. Ben Wilmot asks, Code Orange have released an album that's critically acclaimed, but they can't tour or do much to promote it beyond the odd live stream. Is it possible the momentum push they'd get from this album will likely be gone by the time gigs and tours can return?
Ooh. I mean, yeah, there is no better momentum for a band than touring. I think that's probably not a controversial thing to say. And so, yeah, I think any band releasing an album in this current era is facing an unusual roadblock in that they literally can't tour. But, you know, there's no point really sitting and worrying about that if you are a band at the moment. If you are deciding to put an album out, or in Code Orange's case, of course, they put the album out and then it all went to shit. But if you've got an album out, like, you have to find a way to promote it and you have to do something different. And Code Orange have done that. They put out their really cool streamed gig. It was kind of the first big thing that a band did after we all went into lockdown. That was really great. They've been doing an ongoing video series. They're putting out loads of great merch. And I kind of feel like the anticipation for live music is going to be so huge that when Code Orange do finally swing around again, the kind of release from people to see a band like that live is going to be so huge. So in the long term, I'd like to think it's not going to stall their momentum too much. And if there's any band that knows how to ride out an unusual situation by trying something different, it's Code Orange. I mean, the other band that have just put out a big album, a Trivium, and, you know, you can't move from Matt Heafy being doing press and doing live streaming and all sorts of stuff. So I think the proof is there that you can find ways to push your music and keep your momentum going, even in this very ridiculous climate we're now in.
Code Orange is so proactive as well. They're always just doing things and making dramatic statements, and they've got Roadrunner behind them as well. They've got a label that, you know, they're always really proud to be on. So if any kind of newer bands, what's the word I'm looking for, are going to deal with it, like, then they are in a good place to deal with it.
Yeah, totally. Agreed. Hard agree. Ben Jardine says, as we see a rise in online paid gigs and the possible announcement from Facebook doing the same, I didn't know about that. As the worry of pandemic resurges, insurance companies probably raising prices, and Brexit, could this all be a turning point for promotion, tours and festivals in the future? And could we see a major decline in physical presence shows? Well, I guess our pal from Live Nation earlier, Michael Rapino, kind of gave us as close to a clear answer as we could offer on that at the moment in terms of what the future of gigs looks like.
Yeah, in the short term, I reckon, obviously, there has been a decline because there aren't any at the moment, and the introduction is going to be very slow. But I think in the long term, we'll probably have options for both. So maybe some of the options we've been seeing, the streaming options, will stick around and become another revenue stream, just like bands have meet and greets and things like Golden Circles to make extra money and give fans something else. Perhaps we're going to see more live streaming type of events in tandem with physical shows.
Yeah, that would be cool. I'll be up for that.
Me too.
Me three.
Matt Baker.
Oh yeah, sorry, go on.
It's my turn, Merlin.
Sorry.
Matt Baker says, after all the fuss last year, is anyone actually still listening to the latest Tool album? I gave it another spin at the weekend and was bored before I was halfway through. And Lateralis is one of my favourite albums of all time.
Oh, there's only one person here that's going to answer this, Elle.
I like it. I still listen to it. But it's something that I would put on more for relaxation. So I just kind of listen to it according to mood. It's not something that I put on in the morning where I'm like, oh, I've just woken up, I really need to get some energy by listening to the Tool album. It's more like, oh, I've just woken up and I'm feeling a little bit, like, you know, relaxed and want to ease into my morning, or I'm a bit tired, I'm going to put it on before I go to sleep. It's, you know, everyone listens to music according to their mood. So I wouldn't say it's a record for all moods. I'd say it's a record for specific quiet moods.
I feel like that album basically did what it did in terms of topping polls, and got them a Grammy as well, didn't it? Something like, I've got them a Grammy, and just all the other stuff it did. because Tool fans love Tool so much that if Tool do something, even if I don't know if any Tool fan would call Fear Inoculum the best Tool album, I don't know if anybody would, but
not my favorite.
Tool fans love Tool so much that the kind of not best or even not second best or whatever Tool album to them is still 50 times better than anything else. I think if you're looking at veteran bands releasing albums last year, I think Slipknot and Rammstein put out genuinely brilliant albums that will stand the test of time really well. And I think they will rank very highly in their back catalogs from years to come. But with Tool, they're such an anomaly that you almost can't put them in a bracket with anyone else, mainly because their fans are all insane.
Thanks, Merlin. No offense, Al. Thanks. That's a really nice thing to say.
But you are. You're also dedicated. The most dedicated fans in metal, I think. Just absolutely obsessed with a lot of you.
I don't know. I just think it is a really good record, but I think you have to have a bit of patience. And like I said, you have to be in the right mood. If you haven't got a bit of patience and you're not in the right mood, you'd sack it off, wouldn't you, and listen to Slipknot or something.
Yeah, totally. And I'm just teasing people.
I know.
They're a great band. And I'm well aware I'm in a pathetic minority for not thinking they're the...
Okay, I can have a nice evening listening to Tool and you can do some wrestling or something.
I do wrestling. That's what I do. I do wrestling. God, no one needs that. Jesus.
You can watch your wrestling television.
But yeah, people obviously loved it at the time, man, because it absolutely obliterated the Metal Hammer Critics poll last year. So it did something all right. Marco LG asks, where did the Metal Hammer TV idea end? So, God, we're going back almost a couple of years now, really. We recorded some pilot shows for a Metal Hammer TV show that were pretty fucking cool. They had a bit of a Wayne's World vibe. They had a really cool set that we did. We went to a studio in London to do them. We got some guests in. We had Nurgle in. We had Greg from Dillinger in. It was really good fun. We just never got round to a point where we were able to arrange the right circumstances to make it a full-time thing. The easy way of explaining it is, obviously, Elle and I have full-time jobs at Metal Hammer. Anything that we do outside of Metal Hammer, not outside of Metal Hammer, but any other kind of extensions we do is exactly that. It's an extension. We're not specifically employed to do a TV show or to do a podcast or to do radio stuff. This is all extra stuff that we have to kind of work out. So it's not to, from what I understand about that situation, that TV show isn't completely off the table or gone forever. It's just we haven't quite been able to work out the best time to try and implement it properly and how to make it a kind of regular thing, because it's a big extra thing to suddenly introduce to a brand. But you never know what will happen, especially in this world where we're all finding mad new ways to do things. Maybe we'll see Metal Hammer TV back one day. Who knows, Elle?
Who knows?
Who knows? Want to do the next one?
It's my turn.
Not so cocky now.
No. This is a question from Joel Anthony. And he says, having saved money from not going to gigs or festivals or on holiday this summer, what trip should I tick off the list next year for the best memorable experience surrounding metal and rock music, whether that be a festival or a famous location?
Ooh, there are so many. If you're looking for good metal cities, I mean, pretty much every major European city has like cool metal bars and tends to have a good metal scene and gigs and stuff. So anyway,
Halfords.
Oh yeah, Berlin's amazing. Yeah, Halfords bar is great. And there's another metal bar there with an Urukai in that I can't remember what it's called.
There's a few on the same street.
Yeah, there's a few of those. So yeah, Berlin's great. Paris is great for that. Barcelona's really good. I've got to say Prague, I absolutely loved. I went there for the first time last year. They've got a bar called Nightmare Bar. That's like a horror metal bar. So if you're into that, oh my God, it's like heaven. If you're able to go further afield, and we're not even talking about European festivals here, any of those big European festivals are fantastic. Definitely think about checking those out if you can. If you've got budget to go further afield, obviously places like New York, Montreal's got a fucking fantastic metal scene and a really good vibe there. Chicago has got Kumar's Corner, which is the famous metal burger joint. It's great. Pretty much any major city has a pretty thriving metal scene. In terms of foreign festivals in Europe, I've done Roskilde and Graspop. They're both really good. Oh, and I've done, what's it called? The one that begins with G, that's a punk festival in Belgium.
Groesrock,
thank you. I've done Groesrock as well. That's good fun. What about you, Elle? Any recommendations generally?
I've already said what mine would be. My dream one is Knotfest Japan, which they rescheduled for next year in Tokyo, which would be amazing. And I've been practicing my Japanese on lockdown. It's still rubbish, but you know, I could probably buy some food and eat it at a push.
I mean,
I really would love to do that. Recommendations, I think you've been through the main ones, and then obviously just loads of UK festivals that are going to need some support in 2021, like Reschedule Download, Reschedule Bloodstock, ArcTangent, 2000 Trees, TechFest, etc., etc. I'm looking forward to all those coming back bigger and better next year, because they're all fantastic festivals and it's good to support some stuff from home.
Absolutely.
You've covered like the major ones. Like you said, it is amazing that you can go somewhere and find a metal scene there. And the first thing I always do on every single holiday I go on is find the metal bar when I get there.
Same. I actually I actually made a Google Maps thing that I basically just listed every metal bar I've been to in the world, because I'm a massive nerd. And I got to about 50. Ridiculous. Yes. Not in a kind of, look how many places I've gone away. But in pretty much any city you go to, you can find 3, 4, 5. Like Amsterdam's got about 4 of them.
Yeah, Tokyo's got some good ones. Osaka's got one. I'm trying to think of which bar I went to in Tokyo, which was crazy. I went there with Ladybeard, who you might remember. Ladybeard is a wrestler who dresses as a woman, and he was in a band. What band was he in?
I thought the band was just called Ladybeard.
Maybe it was. So Ladybeard. And he took us to this bar called Guinea Pig in Tokyo, which just played metal music, and it had chains hanging from the ceiling, and it had these photo albums with loads of weird photos inside. I won't describe them, just in case there's someone listening to this podcast with small children around.
Yeah, fair.
But that was
they got to find out somehow.
That was an interesting bar.
Yeah, loads of places. Basically, metal, it will always be alive and well anywhere you look, is our point. Scott Situmple asks, if you could quarantine with one band, who would you choose? He says he would choose Brothers of Metal. Are you joking? I can't back that.
That would be so full on.
Just loads of dudes, and I think a couple of women are in that band, yeah, as well, to be fair. All just like very closely packed together in like furry garb.
In loincloths and loincloths. I don't know what you call it if it's female.
Not sure that's the band I'd pick. I'd probably pick just like really nice, interesting people that got nice vibes and are chill and are good to chat to. So someone like Matt Heafy, he'd be good to hang out with. Lizzie Hale, we'd have a good chat, just hanging out. They're all really cool people. Riley Gale from Power Trip, I really like hanging out with him. He's got cool energy. Just basically any bands that are just nice, not stressful, easy to get on with. And Heafy really likes food as well, so I'll just have him cooking the whole time.
I was thinking that too. I was actually thinking Matt Heafy would be really, because he's well into food, so he'd probably just really enjoy cooking, and it'd be like a challenge, like a stalker challenge, and he could maybe make something really good. That would be the dream. I was trying to think of like bands on Scott's wavelength. I thought Heaviosaurus would be funny, just for a bit of entertainment, because they're all dinosaurs.
Why would you? No, but it's not a bit of entertainment. You're with these people for months. Just in case people don't know what Heaviosaurus is, it's like fucking Barney the Dinosaur doing heavy metal. It's ridiculous. Why would you want to be stuck inside?
They actually use Barney the Dinosaur for torture, so yeah. But my serious choice is probably Tesseract, just because I spent quite a bit of time with them in South Africa a couple of years ago. We went to Johannesburg and Cape Town when they were touring over there, and I know those guys, that I can get on with them and sit in a room with them and have a nice chat. And like you said about thinking of people who are super chill, like, they're just kind of chilled out dudes who are interesting to talk to and nice people, and you wouldn't feel stressed out being in quarantine with them. So probably them.
No, that's a fair choice. I back that. I back that a lot. I mean, I don't really want any metal bands quarantining with me, to be honest. So
I just feel like doing it.
I like my own space. Not too much. That is it for this week's show. Thanks, everybody. We've got a big one next week. We're going to bring back the Metal Hammer Podcast Hall of Fame, and we're going to do Korn. Ooh, that's a big one, isn't it, Elle?
So excited. I'm really excited to see which albums it's between.
Well, at the moment, if you go over to the Metal Hammer Reader Facebook page, there's two fairly clear front runners at the moment, but we've got a week, so we've got time to change it. So if you wanted to get involved and help us pick which two albums we debate to enter into the Metal Hammer Podcast Hall of Fame, go over to the Reader's Facebook page right now, and we'll chat that through next week. Should be a good one. In the meantime, keep on keeping on, guys. Stay safe, stay metal, look after each other. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
See ya.